Hey guys, welcome to the Horse Geeks podcast, where we look at horses and riders from the inside out. I am Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer and developer of Training for Optimal Balance. And with me is Deb Romero, who is an orthopedic massage therapist and certified Alexander Technique instructor. Also, her business is called Optimal Posture. So today's topic is a little bit of a carry-on from last time, where we talked about how to work with our fear of making mistakes. And in the last podcast, we sort of talked about how we don't even know sometimes that we have that fear. So this topic is, why is change scary and why is learning hard? And I have just come to accept that as part of working, teaching people and working with horses is I go, change is scary and learning is hard. So we're going to delve in a little bit into why that is and maybe some strategies for working with going through changes, which all of us, I think in 2020 and even 2021, I think that's been really the upheaval in our lives is this sudden change of being in the middle of a pandemic. And then learning, feeling that difficulty because we're out of our familiar way of doing things. Suddenly everybody has to change how they're doing everything. So it's maybe a good topic for more than just horses and riders today, but change is scary and learning is hard. And why is that? What do we do about it? So I guess to pick up from last time, the first thing I wanted to talk about was like that, I think it was Rick Rees from Stanford University who had the quote about the Socratic professor or Socratic method of learning. And I still have that quote here. The Socratic professor aims for productive discomfort, not panic and intimidation. The aim is not to strike fear in the hearts of students so that they come over prepared to class. And that little statement to me is huge. It encapsulates so much about working with horses. Like a student coming to class, some of them expect to show up and just regurgitate the right answer. And with horses, that's what I call sort of obedience training. The horse learns a cue, you give the horse a command, a cue, and they spit back some thing they can do, whether it's a verbal cue or, you know, and there's nothing wrong with tricks. I got my Arab, I did trick training with her and it was fun. But going beyond that into real learning, it can't be out of obedience and conditioned response. Real learning has to take place inside the individual. And going into it, knowing that change is unnerving. Because we can't be in that place of productive discomfort unless we feel safe on the inside. And if our safety is still a big question mark, going through change is the fear of just going through change is amplified. And I find learning is really hampered. There's not a lot of learning that can occur if there's fear.
Yeah. And fear goes into the brain, sends a message to the central nervous system, which fires up your stress hormones. So you release more cortisol and adrenaline.
Absolutely.
So you've already set yourself up for a snowball effect of transferring all of that information to your skeletal and muscular system. So, and that's where the horse is going to receive that same sensation.
Yes. Yeah. And the two nervous systems horses have, and we have, the parasympathetic nervous system and the sympathetic nervous system. So the sympathetic nervous system is the systemic changes we go through in our body when our sense of safety is questionable. So when we feel fear and we go into the sympathetic nervous system, the hormones change, the blood pressure changes, the heart rate changes, the breathing changes, where your blood flow goes. changes. It goes away from the gut and the vital organs out into your limbs to facilitate fight or flight. So in that moment, what I found really interesting was that the active part of the brain is the limbic system, or the oldest part of the brain, when we're in the sympathetic nervous system. So then, and it's called the fight flight nervous system. And then the parasympathetic, the rest and digest nervous system, all of that reverses. The blood flow goes to the gut, the breathing slows down, is deeper, the hormones change, the blood pressure changes, the heart rate changes, the gut and the vital organs receive more blood flow. So in those two different nervous systems, if we're already in the sympathetic nervous system of fight and flight, and then we're confronted with a big change on top of that, it can really escalate into, for horses and riders, a very unsafe situation.
Yeah, and I remember that was so debilitating to me if I was ever there, even if it was, like you said, going to take a test. Yeah. Just that, whatever it was, fear of failure, fear of not knowing enough, fear, all of those things that come up, it's stifling. It almost brings you to a halt. It makes me numb, can make me numb if I allow that to perpetuate.
Yeah, and the power and complexity of the human brain, it doesn't even have to be a physical reality that's happening right now. Like it kind of has to be that for a horse, or the memory of something.
Right. I do remember doing some research on this, that for humans, it can just be a perceived.
Oh, absolutely.
Fear. It doesn't even have to be real. It could be, and that's one thing I love about the Alexander technique, is bringing, you know, keeping you in the now, being present. You're not projecting
right.
Everything out there. It's the use of what we call inhibition, inhibiting the anticipation.
Absolutely. Because the forces, like if we talk about balancing on a horse, there's physical forces of motion that we have to physically contend with. But the power, like what sets us apart as the kind of apex mammal, is this huge frontal cortex in our brain, which gives us a great capacity for imagination.
Mm-hmm.
But that can work against us as much as it can work for us. So those forces are really quite physical in our body, even if they're generated in our imagination. Like we even have words for it, like the waves of grief or waves of sorrow. And it, you know, kind of knocked me down, right? So we're describing sort of the internal forces, but they're as tangible as an external force. Like being in the ocean, feeling a wave knock you over, that's what grief or sorrow or depression can feel like, even though it's all in our imagination.
Yeah, and it could, and as most Alexander teachers will say, thought always comes before movement or action. So it's our thoughts that we need to really be very aware of what we're thinking.
And I think sometimes we don't even know that we're acting out of fear, that our real undercurrent is feeling insecure or unsafe, because the psychological model of behavior that's related to being in the sympathetic nervous system is called fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. And fawn was sort of a newish one that's been added. But fight can be aggression. It can be anything that's overtly aggressive. But fight can also mean that under stress, you go towards the threat, not away. And flight doesn't necessarily mean running away. It can also just mean going away, which we can.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Going away.
Going away, which we can do mentally and emotionally, as well as physically. So the tendency to go towards, or the tendency to go away, can describe the more subtle versions of fight and flight behavior. It's still fear-based, no matter how it manifests. So that's the important part to recognize is, and there's usually a physical sensation that goes with it.
Yeah.
So you can feel these chemical changes in your body, changes in muscle tone, if you're in fight versus flight. And everybody, you might have a tendency towards one or the other, but everybody's capable of all of it. Same with horses. I always say horses come with a full deck of cards. It's just a matter of which card they pull out. And we do too. And then freeze is the sort of deer in the headlight, mm-hmm. right? And I find sometimes mental stress or emotional stress will send me into freeze. And the way that will manifest for me is a vacation on the couch, like just streaming movies or binging on some show, just going, I don't want to think about it right now.
Right. But
that's kind of either a flight or freeze behavior when you feel overwhelmed, right? And then fawn, which is really interesting, is the people pleasing, like make everybody kind of happy in order to feel secure yourself. And I go, as long as wow. we're in any of those modes, we have to sort of pause, like you said. Sometimes we're pausing for physical reasons, but when we feel those, that anxiety of fawning, going, is everybody happy? Because if they're happy, I feel safe, right? Mm. Or that feeling of freezing where you physically feel like you can't move. You physically sort of feel like your feet are trapped in mud or you're stuck, right? And then the same yeah. thing with fight and flight. And in those moments, if we can recognize it, I find just with the horses, it taught me this, is when that energy is really coming up in a defensive way, the best thing you can do is nothing.
Yes. And nothing. We have two types of inhibition. One is called reactive inhibition, which is where you tend to pause in the middle of something. And where we really like to work with Alexander work is called proactive inhibition. And that is actually making a decision to stop before.
Yeah.
You inhibit before the movement. You've got enough self-awareness, enough education that, ooh, that thought came up. Do I really want to act upon it that way?
Right. So before the thought or the feeling or mm-hmm. the emotion, the feeling, physical feeling, whatever, before it gains momentum, it's much easier to pause before it really grows or gains some momentum in our minds or our body. It's always easier at the starting point to pause and go, let me do nothing for a minute. And I've done the same with horses. I go, some horses where the movement was out of control, I go, okay, let's just work on halt until all that intense energy can just sort of dissipate. Or let's just work on walk until all that excess energy. So like going for a walk or sitting and doing nothing. That's sort of the human mode of doing the same thing to just get back to an internal sense of safety.
Yeah, right. It's checking in. I think I kind of call it checking in with myself. And I try to pause as soon as I get on whatever horse I'm riding and just say, okay, well, where are we today?
Yeah.
Where are you today? And how do you feel? And where am I today? And then move forward from there instead of looking at my watch going, I've only got an hour or whatever. Let's get going with it.
Right.
Just to take that time to pause and listen and then move forward has really been helpful for me.
Yeah. And I had to learn it takes everything in you because you're fighting your own instinct. As soon as our body goes into the sympathetic nervous system or fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, in that moment, we're literally not using the higher brain functions. We're using the oldest part of our brain. And so it's quite difficult to become aware enough, either of the horse or you, to go, maybe this is a moment we have a little timeout. Things are really escalating the wrong direction. And then we're told it with horses, show him who's boss, don't let him win, don't let him know you're afraid, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, how's that working for you? Horses know everything you feel. It radiates out of your body. There is no faking it with a horse. So you may as well come clean and just take a break.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes scary things happen to us. Like I looked up, it was on universityhospitals.org. In human terms, I went, you know, what are the top most stressful events in our life? And they had the top five most stressful life events were the death of a loved one, divorce, move, you could say breaking up too, moving, major illness or injury, and job loss. And so if we look at those are all drastic changes in our daily routine. Drastic changes. And so change always has sort of the effect of feeling like we're unstable.
Oh, I like that. Mm-hmm.
That things are not predictable, that we're unstable. And
right.
And that creates fear, which then creates stress. Or if we succumb to the forces of fear, then we don't make our best decisions in that place. You know,
completely agree.
And so it can snowball really quickly. So even knowing that these are what all of us humans sort of, these changes create massive stress in our daily life because it's significant change to what has given us security and stability and predictability. Then you buy a horse and you go, that's not how it works at all.
Talk about the best teacher on the planet.
Right. No kidding. So change being scary, it just is. I don't know how to get around it. So why is change scary? Because it destabilizes our routine. It makes us suddenly have to become adaptable or look outside of what is normal and comfortable and familiar to us. And that, I think, triggers our instinctual response.
Yeah, and that is, you have to, as an Alexander teacher, really be in touch with that underlying current of your subconscious conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because that triggers it. Because there is, it's like an underlying current that's going on inside you. And if you're not aware of it, it's going to explode at some level.
Yes, it comes out sideways with, I look at all the disruption in our current society right now. And I look at it from standing back and go, wow, there's a ton of fear-based behavior going on right now. And people, we lose our minds when we go into that fearful place. So actually having to like go through lockdown, I went, I'm good with that.
I'm good with that.
I'm going to take a long pause.
I'm on the farm. I got plenty to do.
Plenty to do on a 5-acre property. Plenty to do. And the opposite of fear, I tell people this all the time with horses, because some of the work I do, when you're working on changing internally, the horse's coordination and use, just like Alexander technique, a little bit of work can be really fatiguing, or to make changes, sometimes you have to have a lot of repetition to make what look like simple changes, but they're very deep core changes, which again, because even changing your use, your balance in motion or your use in motion, that change can still have a destabilizing effect. And now it's inside of you. So it can be kind of unnerving. And so because I use a lot of repetitive, simple work in how I train horses, some clients will go, oh, my horse would be bored. And I go, hey, boredom means you feel 100% safe. The opposite of fear is boredom. So if your horse is bored or you're bored, you're ready to go into that place of productive discomfort and learn something new.
Yeah, I like that productive discomfort, because it is going through Alexander School and relearning how to use yourself. Is
things just like how you walk,
how you walk, how you sit
out of a chair. Yeah.
How you brush your teeth, how you eat.
All those things we take for granted as an ingrained habit, all of those unconscious movements and patterns of movement can be changed.
Yeah, it's just, and I know you've used some language around, it's kind of changing the software. You've got to go in and change the body schema, the way the brain thinks about how that has to happen. Because if I say stand up, your little brain says, oh, I got that. I get it.
Right.
You know, and over time, stand up, sit down, do we ever question how we're using our bodies when we do those simple things, those repetitive tasks?
I actually refer to that as the operating system.
Because
if you buy a computer, there's a lot of basic operations and functions that come with that computer's operating system or the platform. But it's just like Mac people can't stand working on PCs and people can't stand working on Mac, because those are very different operating systems, just in the basic level, which would be like walking and sitting and standing and eating and brushing your teeth. And so when you get used to it on one platform, to switch operating systems is a little disorienting. So I put all that under the operating system of the body. And then things like riding bikes, riding horses, that would be like the software you run. So, but learning something new, the other thing we haven't talked about is how learning is hard. I go, why is learning hard? And even productive discomfort speaks to the idea that if you want to be productive, you're going to have to find that place of discomfort, which means that's what learning feels like. It's going to be uncomfortable. And that's where I see trainers more than any, but horse trainers get very stuck, because they've taken on the role of being the expert. But with horses, they're here to show us that you don't know shit your whole life about horses. Just if you think you have it,
just so you know,
the next horse that crosses your path is going to show you everything you don't yet know about horses.
Yeah. And so, what I find with people is, this is the difference between kids and adults. Kids don't have any filters. They just experientially absorb the information. Whereas adults, what we tend to do is we try to compare it, or put it in a category, or those kind of things, which really interrupts the learning process instead of just accepting and adapting the information. I know I had one horse neighbor, I think she came over and watched one of your lessons, and you were teaching on somebody on one of my horses, and the whole conversation was, well, my trainer doesn't do it that way. My trainer does it this way.
Yes.
And I was like, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And that part of that can be the fear of mistakes, like we talked about last time. Part of it can be that we get in a familiar place within our riding, and something that looks really different to what we're used to becomes instantly threatening to our sense of knowing or our own stability within what we're doing. So learning, and this model is a psychological model, I'm not sure who to credit it to, but the four stages of learning that are well mapped out are: the first stage is unconscious incompetence. We don't know what we don't know, right? Then conscious incompetence. We just figured out we don't know what to do, right? And that's that uncomfortable place. That's that place that's going to trigger our fear buttons related to change or making mistakes. But as soon as we realize that there is something we don't know, we feel stupid. And that's where a lot of people step off the learning path.
Because
it's like, I start to realize that I don't know maybe what that other person knows, but if I admit that, maybe as a professional trainer, it takes me down a few notches, so I can't go there. So a lot of professionals will get stuck in their rut because going to that place of conscious incompetence is difficult. And the next phase after that is conscious competence. That's where we're having to be slow and thoughtful, but we're beginning to develop the understanding and the skills of something new. And then
that's the interesting point, because a lot of people who get Alexander work feel it's very slow. Because I think we do this, you do the same with horses. We're slowing down that whole process to bring you aware.
To bring awareness into it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And the unconscious to the conscious, like you said.
And the final version is unconscious competence. That's where the new learning or the new skill is now a new habit. You don't have to think about it anymore. So if we all think back to learning how to ride a bike or learning how to drive a car, we all went through unconscious incompetence, conscious incompetence, fell off the bike a lot, right? Conscious competence, we can do it, but it takes a lot of effort and concentration, into unconscious competence. And if you go back to ride a bike, if you haven't ridden a bike in 10 years, your body will remember. It's in the nervous system because you went through those stages of learning. But it's interesting because I go, the unconscious incompetence place is where I find all the people sitting on outside the arena doing the auditing and making judgments. They got no clue what that rider and horse are working on. So I go, the people in the judgment stage are really at a level of unconscious incompetence. They don't know what they don't know. And it's not against them, but I go, it sure makes that whole like judgment gossip thing a little easier to take. Because you go, you try it, right? You try it. then in a moment or 5 minutes at the most, you will discover your conscious incompetence.
And humble you, we hope.
Yeah. And I go, it's just like people who buy their first horse. Like when I bought my first horse, I was in a complete state of unconscious incompetence, you know, and I had taken riding lessons, so I thought I knew. And then you get a horse and the horse is like, you dummy. The horse will make you feel consciously incompetent right away. And everybody says, oh, you just get on, kick him to go, pull him to stop. Here's how you turn him. You just buy a horse, make sure you buy a good one. And it's like, oh, there's so much more to it than that. But it sounds easy when you're in the bliss of your ignorance stage.
The honeymoon stage.
Then your horse has a couple of wake-up calls for you. And you quickly realize the stage of conscious incompetence. Right? Then we work, and that's the productive discomfort, because now we go, okay, who do I find to help me? What do I need to read? What do I need to learn? You know, surf the internet, you'll get some productive help and some not so productive help. But we're working, we're in that uncomfortable place, realizing that we might have taken on more than we realized. And now we have to bump up our knowledge and our skills. But then we do it, we get a little bit of confidence and competence under our belt, but we have to really think and work hard. And that's where I think I see people in that stage beat themselves up a lot. Like, my horse should be doing XYZ by now, or I should be a better rider by now. I put in all this time, blah, blah, blah. And that's where I see the fight, the internal fight between just getting on with the skill development and visiting the past or projecting into the future, going, I've always been bad, or I'm never ever going to be any good, right? Or my horse has always been bad and my horse is never ever going to be any good. And it kind of slows down rather than just focusing on learning the new information.
Yeah, I like that term, slows down. I think it boggling the mind like that is just not productive.
No, it's not productive. I have no judgment of it. I go, people, everybody has their own process. If that's what right. they need to do, that's what they need to do. But I go, that's pretty slow. Like, it could.
Well, I think I know, as in the horse world, we always put like time frames on things, like 30 days, I'll start your horse for 30 days, or, you know, all of those. And just like posture is not a static position, it's got to be fluid. I think learning should be that. It should be a fluid thing. And there is no time frame that it's going to take for you to learn a new thing.
Exactly. And when people ask me, how long will it take this horse to do blah, 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 I go, it's dictated by the speed at which his body can change. It's dictated by the speed of the body. And when it comes to riders and they say, how long will it take to learn this? I go, that's dictated by the speed of your own conscious awareness.
Like, that's a good one. I like that. You should write that one down.
That's good. I can't make you learn any faster than you can learn. And I can't make a horse's body change any faster than the body allows me in there to make changes. I go, those are layers.
It's layers of both the rider and the horse learning, unlearning, and hopefully moving. But it's kind of like, I was talking to another Alexander teacher, and I was dealing with an injury, and she says, isn't it funny how we always think we should heal faster than the body can heal? We're always saying those things to ourselves.
Yeah.
I should be able to do this by now.
That
little voice in your head, you need to just say, not now.
Yeah. I mean, that little voice in the head, how it translates as an observer watching students or horses don't do that. They're like kids. They don't do that. They just take it as it comes, and they change as fast as the human is capable of guiding them. And I go, the slower part is working with people who are more complex, and that sort of internal dialogue and comparisons and trying to think learning is going to be magically easy and instant. It never is, no matter what you do, right? And then a horse and rider situation has a lot of variables and a lot of complexity. So I go, to do it well takes awareness. And as long as these voices are fighting in your head, all that does is narrow the bandwidth. Just slow down your data, like
dial up.
Dial up speed. Yep. Yeah.
And you can even compare it to what do they say? Most car accidents are due to distractions, and distractions don't have to be outside of you. They can be
right
within you. So it's not just the horse. We, with our society, need to begin focusing on staying present, you know, and not putting things into categorizing things, or, you know, do I label it friendly, neutral, or unfriendly in my head, or do I just accept it and move on?
Exactly. And I think the most masterful horsemen I've ever worked with those four stages of unconscious incompetence, it's like the more you learn about horses, the more it's just a given that you don't know a lot. You probably don't know more than you do know. And that, you know, after 20 years with horses, I think all long-term horse people have that in common, that you go, you're going to learn something new every day working with horses. And the dangerous part is like the beginners, you can learn a lot in their first 5 years of owning a horse. And those people are the most dangerous because they go out thinking they know everything. And they get their ass handed to them by a horse. And the more you do that, the more you realize that unconscious incompetence phase becomes your friend, or the conscious incompetence phase, I should say. Once you realize what you don't know, that actually becomes your best friend, because you go, oh, good. I just learned about something I didn't know about before. And now I can put another tool in my toolkit, more skills in my body, or help the horse more. So you start to just realize that cyclical process never ends. And I don't think it ends with anything. I for sure know it doesn't end with horses, but I go, I think that's true of anything. We can go deep into learning about a topic and still find a place where we are consciously incompetent, even within our profession.
Oh yeah.
And I go, bodies like your work with Alexander Technique and orthopedic massage, I go, that is, bodies are complex. Like, to think it's as simple, the difference between like a true master with horses is very humble. They know if you're genuinely trying to learn, they will help you. And they're humble about what they know, because they know nobody in this lifetime is going to learn everything there is to know about horses. And then going from amateur status to sort of a professional, and I don't mean you have to be a professional for a living, but going from an amateur or medium level rider to what I would consider a professional type rider or an elite rider is all about going through those phases over and over and over and learning in more and more detail about horses or your body, which are infinitely complex. I mean, our best scientists and doctors don't know everything there is to know.
And the speed of the information that we get nowadays is so much faster. And so there's more information coming faster than it used to.
Yes.
Science is, you know, much faster than it with things than it used to be. So
when I work with people with horses, when I hear somebody ask me, what do I do? Right. Lots of people are still thinking, what do I do? I go, they're in the land. They're not yet tapping into the real knowledge available. When that shifts from what do I do into what is this that I'm feeling and experiencing, I go, then they're getting to a level of competency in their riding that I go, okay, now you're getting up to the professional level, the elite level of riding, because you're asking different questions, not how do I do this maneuver? How do I get my horse to go? How do I get my horse to stop? You know, those kind of things. Or how do I do this dressage test? Or how do I do this jump? It's like, it's a different way of thinking when you start to go, what is the horse feeling and thinking? And what am I feeling while I'm riding? Where's my balance, the feel, the timing, the what are the forces of motion doing? As opposed to put your leg here and your rein there and do this recipe.
Yeah, and that it's not about shoulders back, heels down, you know, but going to that place of what am I feeling? What is going on the inside?
The awareness, like that's where the speed of the consciousness comes into play, because you can only absorb so much at a time. And it's an intense amount of mental focus to have this nonverbal conversation with the horse. And that is not like, it's not a quick thing. I go, it really depends on people's ability to focus, on how much awareness they show up with. And it's more than just not falling off the horse and being able to sort of give a rein and a leg aid. I go, that that learning process becomes deeply internal and is based on awareness. Because as a rider and the teacher of your own horse, we have to be self-aware and aware of the horse. And that's the only way we can become the guide or the leader of the dance.
But yeah, that curiosity of curiosity, adaptability, those things. It's not about what do I do? It's not about the maneuver.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think I learned from horses, we come back to our topic, why is change scary and learning hard? And I go, for humans, I just accepted that it was. I go, okay, change is scary. It's probably going to trigger me. And learning is hard. I'm probably going to have some tough days while I'm trying to learn something new. And just accepting that as a simple fact helped me not, it kept my bandwidth wide.
Yeah.
It kept me open to insights and information. But from the horses, I go, change is scary. Learning is hard. Horses are so much more adaptable.
Yes, they are.
You know, like, okay, they're triggered as prey animals by movement and things that flutter around and changes in the environment, because that's linked to their safety, just like us. But they adapt to change way faster than humans. They get used to things that should terrify them way easier than humans do. And then I find they like to learn. When the horse feels safe, I go, I'm sure they're bored just eating grass in a pasture all day. They actually like to come out and interact with their human.
I think they do. I hadn't ridden in about a week, and I spent most of the day out there today. And, you know, they gave me like, where have you been? Why haven't you been here to talk to me? What's going on?
Yeah. And that was why I locked on to that phrase, productive discomfort, because I go, that's the sweet spot when I'm working with horses, is if it's too much discomfort, they're going to become defensive, go into the sympathetic nervous system and game over. But if I can stay in that place of challenge, where it's very productive, if they're not bored and repetitive and just shutting down or getting distracted because I'm not challenging enough in their bodies, their skills. But if I over-challenge them, it can lead to fear. So that little sweet spot called productive discomfort, I go, that's exactly what I look for every ride on every horse. And depending on that threshold between productive discomfort and fear and discomfort or boredom, I go, every horse has a different like area. It's not a specific thing. It's unique to each individual where that little sweet spot is, where we have a challenge, but it's not scary. And I think that's where people begin to enjoy learning too.
Right. But I like what you said about And acknowledging that it changes hard, learning is scary, or vice versa, is accepting that, is saying, yep, that's where I'm at right now.
Yep.
And that's okay.
This is where we're at. It's okay. It's not going to be this way forever.
Right. And that, I think, is a really good point that needs to happen for people to accept all those emotions that are coming in, but learn to inhibit and redirect, just like we do with a 2-year-old.
Yes.
Oh, no, 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 not there. Go over here.
Redirect.
Redirect. Yeah.
You don't try to contain that energy. You just give it new things to do.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil that curiosity. It's just go after something else, not that.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
And I think we've had that conversation before. When we're riding, it's pretty much asking the horse questions and they respond. And it's usually, no, not that. Yes.
They try a lot of things.
No, that wasn't it.
And instead of getting mad or frustrated, I find it fascinating because I go, what I might have called an obstinate horse in the past, I can now look at him and go, wow, that was really creative. That was a creative way to get out of doing what I asked you to do.
You can see
the intelligence. It's just that the intelligence isn't working with you. It's working against you. The intelligence is there all the same. It's not really bad behavior.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add? Because I think I had a little set of notes, but we talked about everything that I thought was important on this topic.
Yeah. I think it's good. I think the only thing I'd want to add is that as teachers, if we could help them, the rider and the horse, through that type of language of, you know, accepting, motivate towards change, but not punish, but to be more of the motivator.
Yes.
To help the change occur, and that there's really no right or wrong.
And not to think that there's anything wrong with the student any more than a horse when they're in a moment of fear, or if they're starting to get bored, you need to challenge them more, right? Or if they're in a moment of fear. So instead of a student, just like a horse, trying to fit our teaching curriculum,
mm-hmm.
we have to look at the individual and go, wow, where is that productive discomfort place? And if we stay there, we make a lot of progress. But sometimes you can't stay there too long. You got to give somebody a blue ribbon and say, you did great. So they can go, ah, okay, I feel safe again. I got a blue ribbon.
After an Alexander lesson, when you're at beginning stages, you just want to go lie down. Okay, yeah. That was enough. Stop.
Yes. All right, my dear. I think we will wrap it up. Thanks to all who joined us, who are following the podcast. Subscribe if you want to follow. Leave comments if there's things you would like to discuss with us or have us talk about. And we hope to see you next week for the Horse Geeks podcast. Thanks, everybody.
Bye. Be kind.
Bye.